news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus, you won't know if you don't listen.
Hey, this is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. Thank you for joining me live. I'm not sure why. Oh, there it is. I want to share something very quickly with you. I talked last hour about autocracy and my concern that that there are a whole lot of psychological realities that we need to understand if we want to defeat Donald Trump for the presidency in 2020. I have also often said, and I will say until I'm blue in the face, whether he wins another term or not, Democrats have got to take back the Senate. He has already put in place over 180 federal judges who will serve for life, who have been vetted by the most ultra-conservative think tanks, including some that the American Bar Association said weren't even qualified. This is a danger, and the Senate is where that can be stopped. Now, this morning's Los Angeles Times had an editorial that they entitled All the President's Men. And I want to share some of this with you, and then I want to talk about this 2020 election. Because in 6 days, Nevada has their caucus. In 13 days, South Carolina has their primary. And 16 days from now is Super Tuesday, when Texas and California and a whole lot of other states will get to be heard. But this editorial by the LA Times today, called All the President's Men, let's at least acknowledge, you know, this is a man who was going to clean out the swamp. And the sentencing of Roger Stone is a reminder of the scope of how scandalous the behavior is by this president's associates and underlings. He grew up on the streets in New York, where he learned how the mob worked. And he went into a business that was very aligned with the way the mob works, casinos. He made a lot of money, but boy, he borrowed to the hilt and wasn't afraid to declare bankruptcy if it meant he could walk away from obligations. He strove his whole life in New York to be accepted as one of the in people, and never was. And that still rankles. And he has surrounded himself in the presidency. He's gotten rid of a lot of experts who've been there through various administrations, Republican and Democrat. People who are steeped in knowledge about the things that we have to know if we're going to be the leader of the world. No fewer than 6 people in his own little circular orbit have either been convicted or pleaded guilty to criminal charges, fraud, lying to investigators, lying to Congress. 4 of his cabinet-level appointees left because they were misusing tax dollars. More investigations are going on into Rudy Giuliani and the inaugural committee. And we already know that his charity has been all but shut down because they were giving the money to themselves. So from this editorial in the LA Times this morning, here's among the things they say. He lies, he bullies, he interferes with investigations and exudes disdain for the rule of law. He meddles with the Justice Department, attacks judges, and generally encourages American cynicism toward crucial institutions. You should not have confidence in the FBI, because they're not all just totally falling at my feet. He promised to drain the swamp, and if anything, he has expanded it through petty graft and corruption. he granted waivers to some of his top appointments after he weakened Obama administration restrictions on what people could be doing while they were serving in the administration. He weakened those and then appointed people who couldn't even meet the weakened limits. In Trump's first 2 years, he appointed almost 300 lobbyists to government positions. A former coal industry lobbyist running the Environmental Protection Agency. An activist who urged that federal lands be turned over to the states running the Bureau of Land Management. A former oil and agribusiness lobbyist running the Department of the Interior. And it goes on from there. This editorial column in the LA Times this morning concludes, no, Trump was not exonerated. Rather, his protectors in the Senate allowed him to escape consequences for his actions, leaving us with a president more emboldened than chastened. He was unfit to be president. And he has proved it time and again. That's the Los Angeles Times editorial. You may think that that's a totally independent, liberal-minded newspaper. I grew up in L.A. The L.A. Times was not known as an ultimately liberal paper. And if you don't agree with their point of view, that's fine. Refute the facts that they are stating. Don't just say, well, you know, they're on the left, they hate Trump. There are facts there. If they're not true, refute them. And if they are true, explain how you justify that. Okay, I said we're only 6 days away from the Nevada caucuses, 13 days to South Carolina, and 16 days to Super Tuesday. So a big piece of news out of this past week with the New Hampshire primary. Donald Trump won the Republican primary in New Hampshire. Are you surprised? He only has one opponent, really, to speak of left, and that's former Governor William Weld. But Governor Weld, who hasn't raised a whole lot of money and isn't getting very much exposure anywhere on television, Governor Weld pulled in something like 9 or 10% of the Republican vote in New Hampshire. Trump overwhelmingly won New Hampshire last time in the primary when there were still lots of candidates at that point. But with 96% of the ballots counted in New Hampshire, he had an 86% support, which was just over about 112,000 votes. He got 100,000 votes in the primary when he ran against all those other candidates back for the 2016 election and claimed 35% with 100,000 votes just 4 years ago. So the truth is, there wasn't much suspense about the Republican primary in New Hampshire. But some primary voters actually aligned themselves with Trump individually rather than the Republican Party. 54% of the voters in the Republican primary in New Hampshire, 54% of them, said they felt more allegiance to Trump than to the Republican Party. That's how you get an autocrat. They're not representing a party. They're representing themselves. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side this past week, Michael Bennett dropped out of the race, and he was getting no traction at all, which is really a shame because he's a really nice, soft-spoken guy. Good instincts. Andrew Yang dropped out. You know, I did an interview with Andrew Yang last year and was very impressed with him. And he dropped out. But I am happy to say, if I can find that item, Andrew Yang, if you will recall, he was running on the idea that he was offering what he called a freedom dividend for people to get $1,000 a month. Every person in the United States, every citizen, would get $1,000 a month, and it would change people's lives. He called it a freedom dividend. And he was offering a test case about all of that during the campaign. And he may have dropped out of the race, but the lucky families who got that freedom dividend as a test in advance will not be shortchanged. Andrew Yang said he will continue the $1,000 a month payments to 13 families across the country until the end of the one-year commitment that he made when he started doing that. So I'm pleased to see him having that much integrity. Tom Steyer, one of the billionaires running for president, and Bernie Sanders got endorsements from the lawmakers who are on their campaign payrolls. So this is something that could be scandalous. As it turns out, in South Carolina, Tom Steyer was criticized for hiring black lawmakers or the companies that they run to work on his campaign. He could afford to do that. Well, on the other hand, you've got the Trump campaign is going out into the black community and handing out cash. The idea of buying votes, I mean, that's pretty blatant. Meanwhile, with Nevada's caucus coming up, how amazing. Donald Trump has tweeted that he is going to reverse his push for the Nevada nuclear waste dump, which nobody in Nevada wanted. Gosh, I wonder if he decided to do that because the Nevada caucuses are coming up. Ah, it's all just politics. And that's why a lot of people are so turned off by the whole world of politics. Having been in the world of politics myself, I'm going to tell you it's a tough game to play, but without it, we would not have representative democracy, and that's what we have to hold on to at all costs. This is Anita Rufus, and you're listening to iHub Radio.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
So one of the things that's become most obvious about the 2020 election is that Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, has enough money to buy his way into enough name recognition. And by the way, his ads are great. And to try and find ways to overcome the reality of things he said in the past. He's willing to apologize for things he said in the past. That's more than the president will ever do. Meanwhile, a lot of people, with regard to the New Hampshire primary, nobody seemed to make a big deal out of the fact that Donald Trump told Republicans in Iowa that they should, because he knew he was going to win the primary anyway, that they should take ballots as Democrat and vote for Bernie Sanders to win the New Hampshire primary. Anyone who walked into the primary booth in New Hampshire could choose to take a Democratic ballot or a Republican ballot. Now, we have some ability to do that here in California, but it's not quite as easy, and things are a little more confusing here. But the president told Republicans, go vote for Bernie Sanders, because he believes he can beat Sanders. Meanwhile, Bloomberg knows how to go at Trump. He knows how to troll Trump. And yet I will say, making fun of Donald Trump may not be the smartest way to convince his voters. And I will say again what I have said many, many times. He is not stupid. He is ignorant. There's a big difference. So while Democrats have been kind of laughing at Trump's foibles, he and his associates and his campaign are literally planting landmines. Significant cuts to Medicare and Medicaid, removing environmental protections for waterways, and collecting massive amounts of money for the fall presidential campaign, including the fact that this coming Wednesday, Donald Trump will be here in Rancho Mirage for a fundraiser at a private estate. And already there are three different local groups planning protests. First of all, at the idea of Trump at all. And second of all, at the idea of these big buck fundraisers. He just had another one in Florida. We lose the moral clarity to hold the president to account on serious matters if we are constantly making fun of him for things that really aren't that important. Keep that in mind. On the other hand, as I've often said, the big problem between Republicans and Democrats, regardless of the candidate, is that Republicans just want to win, and Democrats think if they could explain it to you, if you could just understand it, nobody's got that kind of attention span anymore. Now, I do have some items that indirectly relate to the president and his policies that I do want to share with you. I don't know if you heard this story, but in Juarez, smugglers have engineered camouflage hook and ladders made of rebar that blends in with the border wall. So it's hard to tell that that ladder is being put up against the wall, and smugglers are just going over the wall. It turns out that El Paso, there's a stretch of the border that really is part of El Paso's urban areas that is littered with rusted rebar ladders at the base on both sides. Now, I heard the president this morning talking about how his wall, it's painted black so that it will absorb the sun, because you know it's hot on the border, he said. And because it's hot on the border, that black wall will absorb the sun and become so hot nobody can climb it. Smugglers are using camouflage ladders. Get real. And another thing, the president is constantly saying, promises made, promises kept. A lot of his goals are not even close to being kept. His own proposed budget said that we would get to the point of 4% growth or even more. Growth in 2018 was 2.9. In 2019, it went down to 2.3. Right now, it's at about 2%. So even the incredible upward curve of growth that Obama left him, he's nowhere near meeting that promise. His new budget forecasts less than 3% growth going forward. What happened to that promise? He said that he would make sure to replace Obamacare with a better, cheaper health insurance plan. He hasn't even put one forward, and he's in court trying to get rid of Obamacare. He vowed that we would have clean air and clean water, but he's appointed environmentally unfriendly lobbyists to run those agencies. Let's call him on the truth and stop trying to make fun of him. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. I'm going to come back with things you wouldn't know if you didn't listen to this show.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
So there are some stories that I found this week that got to me. And these don't have anything necessarily to do with politics other than the fact that a lot of these are influenced in one way or another by policies. But I have to ask myself, why is this happening right now? It's too easy to say, well, because the president's. No, that's too easy. It lets us too much off the hook. White supremacist propaganda distributed all across the United States jumped more than 120% just between 2018 and 2019. That's more than double. And this item came out this week that just kind of blew me away, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this. 64 white supremacists have been sentenced to a combined total of 820 years in prison. The largest collective prosecution of white supremacists in the United States, and this is according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Northern District of Texas. The most recent one is a 51-year-old man who was sentenced to 11 years in prison for a drug dealing scheme. And that was the 64th hearing in this sentencing for kidnapping and drug-related conspiracies involving hate groups. The U.S. attorney said in a press release, not only do white supremacist gangs endorse repugnant ideologies, they also facilitate a violent drug and gun trade, putting citizens in grave danger. We were alarmed but not necessarily surprised at the quantities of drugs and firearms recovered during this investigation. These defendants were charged with everything from violent assaults to one suspected neo-Nazi tried to run over the officers during his arrest. And I ask myself, why is this happening? What has made it okay for this to be more overt? It's always been there, bubbling beneath the surface. Yes, we now have social media that allows these people to connect with each other and instigate each other. But what is making it seem like it's okay to them to be more public? Well, here is an incident of something that I see as part of the reason that this is happening so overtly. On Chicago's North Side, there was an auditorium at a high school where the students got together. They were going to celebrate Hispanic heritage. But first, the teachers said they had to stand for the national anthem. A group of students decided to remain seated. Now, remember, this was an assembly in a high school to celebrate Hispanic heritage. And a group of the students decided to remain seated during the national anthem. It was a silent but recognizable condemnation of racial injustice. That was the way they thought of what they were doing. Before the national anthem had ended, the demonstration of them sitting led to exactly the kind of discrimination that they were trying to protest. One student, who is a Latina and a citizen of the United States, born in this country, she refused a teacher's direction to stand up during the anthem, and he said, where it could be heard by other students, go back to your country. She's a citizen of our country. Then he turned to a black student who was also sitting down and asked whether she was part of the school system's free and reduced lunch program, telling her she should stand for the people who died for this country. And then these students who sat through the anthem were told to leave the assembly. Now, for what it's worth, just for what it's worth, no less than the Supreme Court has said, it is not necessary to stand for the national anthem any more than it is necessary to pledge allegiance to the flag. You can make whatever you want to make out of that. There are some religious denominations that do not believe one should ever pledge allegiance to anything other than God. You're going to take issue with that. The Supreme Court said nobody can be made to do that. And once again, I will say, thank God for the courts. We better take back the Senate if we want to have any ability to influence generations going forward with federal judges. You know that Trump proposed this, you have to work in order to get Medicaid. On appeal, that was rejected by a federal court. A lower court had the decision all the way back in March, last March, that voided these work rules and said that it jeopardized similar programs in other states that are taking the Medicaid benefits. Now, it is possible the government will want to go to the Supreme Court, which they believe they have stacked well enough. But nevertheless, a federal court has upheld on appeal this lower court ruling that the work for Medicaid plan cannot be put into effect. Here's another way that the courts have done something. We talked some time ago with regard to the census that there were some groups in some states that wouldn't be counted. North Dakota has these Indian tribes that live on reservation land that does not have street addresses. And one of the rules put out for the census was it has to have a street address. Well, a judge has found that Native Americans can vote without an ID that shows a residential address. So not only will they be counted for the census, but they can't be denied the right to vote. In another U.S. district judge's ruling, a federal judge prohibited immigration authorities from relying on databases that are said to be faulty to ask law enforcement agencies to hold people in custody. This is about sanctuary cities. When somebody in your town, if it is a sanctuary city that has been declared by the city council, then if somebody's in jail and they're about to be released and it is believed by the city that they may be illegal, sanctuary says you don't have to call the immigration service and report that that person is about to be put out on the street. Well, the president is now sending ICE SWAT teams to various cities around the country because they had the gall to declare themselves as sanctuary cities. State laws, this is one of those things, again, the president during his State of the Union was talking about this blue-collar boom that wages for low-income workers are rising quickly. Well, guess what? That isn't as a result of anything he did or that the federal government did. It's been done by states, and largely it's been done because not just the state legislature, but the voters said they wanted to raise the minimum wage so that people who work could in fact support themselves. There is a proposal that has been put forward in California that would raise the age of adult in criminal cases to 19. Now, you know that a lot of times prosecutors have the discretion with, for example, that 14-year-old kid who killed the woman. And I mean, there's just horrible story going on. And at 14, he is going to be tried as an adult. The prosecutors have made that decision. Well, in California, they want to raise the age to 19 in the criminal courts before somebody can be adjudged an adult. This 14-year-old boy is the one who killed the Barnard College student. Her name is Tessa Majors. And he is being charged with two counts of second-degree murder and being brought on those charges as an adult. I don't agree with the proposal in California to raise the age to 19 for consideration as a juvenile, because at 18, they can enlist, they can vote, they are considered legally adult, and therefore they should be treated as if they were legally adults. Now, I talked a couple weeks ago about this proposal that came out of the federal government that just tickled me. And it was that from now on, all government buildings anywhere in the country, from a local city hall to the state capitol to anything on federal property that is being funded by the federal government, must be done in Greek or Roman style. No, seriously. The United States is nearly 250 years old. And a wonderful editorial in the New York Times said, "We no longer need to wear borrowed clothes." When this country was founded, the founders, in writing up our Constitution and other things at the time of the founding of this country, leaned heavily on ancient precedents. And that included the architecture of old Greece and Rome, because it had that kind of implication of the importance of government. Well, there are some buildings that have already been funded, and this federal program has regularly succeeded in producing buildings embraced and cherished by their occupants and their communities. There's a little known but highly successful government program that encourages excellence in the design of federal buildings. However, this proposed executive order that would be signed by the president is called Making Federal Buildings Beautiful Again. Seems to me that has something of a resonance of something they put on red hats. They say there's a crisis because we have largely stopped building beautiful buildings that the American people want to look at and work in. The classical architectural style shall be the preferred default styling for all federal buildings. Oh, give me a break.
Because you only think you know the truth. striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, again, I thank you so much for tuning in. I'm here live every Sunday from 10 to noon. Well, almost every Sunday. And there are podcasts available wherever you get your podcasts. Put in iHub Radio and Anita Rufus, and you will find them. If you would like to get on my blast list, I do send a blast out every week, kind of teasing what the show will be about. And I also put it up on my Facebook page. You can either like Anita Rufus or you can like Lovable Liberal. If you'd like to get on the list to get the blast sent directly to your email, just send an email to me, anita@lovableliberal.com, and I will get you on the list. Nobody else sees those addresses but me, and I don't sell them to anybody. Okay, a few more things that you might not know if you didn't listen to this show. There was a nuclear cleanup in 1966, and an American B-52 bomber that was carrying hydrogen bombs exploded over Spain. The Air Force kept that disaster classified, but they did send over 1,500 troops to clean up what was left as a result of this B-52 bomber with hydrogen bombs exploding over Spain. Many of the people who went to do the cleanup later found out they had cancer and other illnesses, and they were unsuccessful in their efforts to get the federal government to pay for their medical care. Well, it's now more than 50 years later, but those veterans have won the right to sue as a class for health benefits, although the fact is many of them have already died. This bomber exploded while it was being refueled in midair in 1966, dropping its four hydrogen bombs to the ground in Spain. They weren't armed, but the conventional explosives in two of them blew up on impact, and there was plutonium scattered all over the town of Palomares, Spain. The Air Force, even as recently as this month, said that its assessment that the Palomares troops had not suffered harmful exposure to radiation still was, as far as they were concerned, the truth. Well, hell of a coincidence that a lot of the people who cleaned up Palomares after that accident died of cancer and other illnesses that could very well have been related to exposure to plutonium, for heaven's sake. 30 years ago this week was when Nelson Mandela walked out of prison after 27 years in captivity. And if you will recall, that event and his later succession to the presidency of South Africa is what ended the apartheid system in South Africa. 30 years ago this week, and imagine what it was like for Nelson Mandela, those 27 years in prison, and to come out with a loving and forgiving psyche so impresses me that even though we may be barely out of the slime, some of us are farther ahead than others. Marie Yovanovitch, who was the ambassador to Ukraine, who was pushed out by the president because evidently she had the gall to testify in front of Congress when subpoenaed, she received something called the Trainor, T-R-A-I-N-O-R, Trainor Award for Excellence in the Conduct of Diplomacy from Georgetown University. And when she walked out to receive this award just this past week, the thundering standing ovation that she got was really reassuring to those of us who feel badly that somebody who has spent her life as a career diplomat making a difference on behalf of this country was treated the way she was. And what she said in accepting that award, she said, right now the State Department is in trouble. Senior leaders lack policy vision, moral clarity, and leadership. She lamented the hollowing out of the Department of State. She lamented budget cuts to other agencies and international organizations. She said, this is not about a handout for foreign friends. It's about enlightened self-interest. We either care about our role as the leader of the world toward human rights and getting along with people and having a thriving democracy where we respect the people and we have orderly transfers of power. We either believe in all of that or we don't. And if you do, then you have to do something about it. Now, as much as Bernie Sanders trashes billionaires and as upset as a lot of people are that Tom Steyer bought his way onto the debate stage or that Michael Bloomberg has unlimited funds to spend to get his name out there and his message out there and is having a positive impact by going up in polls nationwide. And as much as both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren talk about how we've got to get the billionaires from having the kind of control they do, that isn't what it's about for me. Changing how we finance campaigns and overturning the idea that corporations are people and that hidden donors can have PACs where they give money without ever really putting out who they are. Let's give some respect to some of the billionaires, like Bill and Melinda Gates. 20 years since they founded the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they have spent almost $54 billion on global health and development issues. They said, 20 years later, we're just as optimistic and we're still swinging for the fences. But now we have a much deeper understanding of how important it is to ensure that innovation is distributed equitably. If only some people in some places are benefiting from new advances, then others are falling even farther behind. We, Bill and Melinda Gates, believe that progress should benefit everyone, everywhere. Amen to that. And let's stop the idea that we can throw everybody, just because they've been successful and made money, into one pot and make them the villains. Get over it. We are all in this together, and we need to be moving toward positive end outcomes that will benefit everyone. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal, Sundays live from 10 to noon here on iHub Radio.